Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.
From Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, this is What's Next, an hour dedicated to amplifying the voices of marginalized and underrepresented communities across Western New York and Southern Ontario.
We cannot erase, we cannot reform, we cannot make things better if we're uncomfortable having tough conversations,
absolutely,
if we're uncomfortable talking about race.
What's Next carries forward our mission to engage in meaningful conversations about race, equity, and the shared concerns that deeply affect Buffalo's East Side and beyond.
Don't stop. Make those families part of your life. Their lives are part of yours. Don't stop.
Together, we dive into the real issues, striving for understanding, connection, and change.
In the suburban area, everywhere, we must work and teach our children.
And welcome. This is Buffalo, Toronto Public Media, NPR, and you're listening to What's Next. My name is Jay Moran. With us this morning, historian, author, speaker, Emmanuel Kulu. Thanks for joining us.
Greetings, greetings. How are you? Thanks for having me.
It is a real pleasure to have you with us. A lot to talk about. You're an individual with some wide-ranging of experience, but you have a singular focus, but most certainly your interest in African history is noteworthy for sure. As a matter of fact, you're going to be taking part in an event coming up at the Buffalo History Museum. Mm-hmm. That's on May 15th. One Race, the Human Race is the title.
Yes.
Tell me what to expect.
Yeah, you know, I expect our community leaders, our health service workers, our social workers, our educators, all to come out and to show solidarity against white supremacy. This particular event will be an educational event. We're going to have Jillian Hainsworth, who really emerged during the time of 514 as the poet laureate in the city of Buffalo, the founder. The founding one. I got to give a big shout out to Jillian.
The first. Always will be the first.
Always will be the first. We're also going to have Gardnell Whitfield is going to do a brief speaking at the event as well. We hope to have the African American Cultural Center to support us with some African drumming. And I will be the keynote speaker, which is the main topic of the event, One Race, the Human Race, where we'll try to bring everyone into the scope of African history.
Let's get into that part of it. We've had some discussions on this program around that topic as well, but now it's your chance to bring your perspective. And I think that's the important thing that, and I think you would agree that, you know, the first and foremost, the absence of African history.
Yeah.
What have we lost because there has been that absence of African history in our classrooms?
Yeah, you know, you can't have world history without black history. You can't have black history without African history. This is all encompassing. I look at when you label a certain part of history, you don't hear, you know, Italian history, or you don't hear white history. You don't hear these terminologies placed on it. But when it comes to black history, you see it's termed based on color. And I particularly don't agree with that perspective.
Okay.
Of it. I think it's more important to see it as a part of world history.
Right.
And particularly that geographical area and how it affected the whole entire world. African history, when you think about Africa, Africa is the only place in the world that doesn't need importation from any other part of the world to survive. And in fact, every thriving nation on the face of the earth needs Africa for survival. I was just looking at my cell phone and I was thinking about the coltan, the cobalt that comes out of the Congo. I was thinking about the rubber, the ivory, the diamonds, the gold that we wear on our rings and buy for our wives. All of these things, they come out of Africa. You go into Congo, or you go into Ghana, or you go into even parts of Cameroon where cocoa is so rich.
Mm.
And then you think about those kids who work in those farms digging for cocoa and doing all this mining, and yet they've never tasted chocolate or ever had a cup of coffee. These are things that are not taught in our schools. So it's very, very important how Africa has been the center of survival for every thriving nation on the face of the earth. Why wouldn't it be included? So I think it's very important for us to include it, and not just from that perspective. We also can look at it from a scientific perspective. We can look at it from a biological perspective. Every human being, scientifically, comes out of East Africa.
Hmm.
So why wouldn't that be pivotal to our education? So this is why I saw that this was a need in our school systems. I was working with Dr. Fatima Morrell for many, many years, still continuing to work with Buffalo Public Schools. Shout out to Daphne Bell for continuing to bring me on even after Fatima departed.
Mm-hmm.
But I've been working with them for the last 7 years.
What's it like with the kids in Buffalo Public Schools? It's got to be an eye-opening experience.
They love it. We did African mask making. We did like a six-week course of African history where we're really covering 6,000 years
sure.
in 6 weeks. So it's amazing. They absolutely love it. And it's so interesting how many students had no clue that Africans had empires. And we know why that is, because the miseducation.
It's interesting to talk about your background as well.
Mm-hmm.
You grew up in the city here.
Yep.
McKinley High School grad, mm-hmm. ECC, UB.
Mm-hmm.
So a local kid all the way.
Yeah.
Your father, though, mm-hmm. was from Cameroon.
Yes.
Share with our audience the story you told me about you first going to Cameroon with your father. And
yeah.
I guess a little bit of a stunning surprise for you.
Yeah. You know, it was one of those things where, you know, you're told things right here. And that's why education is so important. You're told things right home that Africa's a jungle. Animals are just going to attack you. You're going to get sick if you eat the food. People are in poverty, flies flying around their head. But when you actually get there and you see the peace, the joy, and the connection that people have with the actual soil, it really changes your perspective. You go into the markets, you go into the city part of the region, and you're seeing all these things. It's no different from living here in America. Now, obviously, you have your rural areas. Right. You have your areas that are still kept very natural. And then you have your city. It's just like if I were to drive out to East Aurora. Mm. Right. And I'm seeing more forest or tree area.
Yeah.
So to speak. So it's no different than that. And those areas where you're going to see the jungles or lions, most of those areas are gated off. You're not just going to be able to go over there unless you have some sort of license or you live in that tribal area, so to speak. So that's what people really don't understand. So that misconception, I even had it as a right. young man, and I got spankings for it. I got my behind toe up over speaking that ignorance because my father didn't play that. My father did not play that. He said, do not allow people to believe that your history began in slavery. So I started off as a very young man educating. The problem I had was I wasn't able to prove it at that time.
Right.
You know, because every book that I can share about African history at that time that was available to me was about the jungle or what National Geographic had presented all these years. So just sharing some of my experiences when I had been there with my family in Cameroon and the things that we were taught, the stories that we were told from ancient history, even about the transatlantic slave trade, how that is somewhat of a misconception as well. For example, many people believe that the majority of African people sold other African people, which is not true. It was maybe a minority, a small group of Africans who were in power at the time, who were participating in capturing and enslaving people and selling them. And on the flip side of that, they also didn't know what's going to happen on the other side of the water when they got there.
Right.
They didn't know what was going to happen to them. So a lot of these things are historical facts that we haven't been taught. We've been taught a very Eurocentric, narrow view of African history. So I sought to prove these things, and that led me to what I'm doing today.
How about your dad, when you were talking about him, and him not accepting uh-huh. what you came to understand about Africa,
mm-hmm.
how did he view the United States and the reality of African Americans?
Yeah, I like that question. It's a very good question. My father, when he first came here, he also went through the same experience where people would say to him, do you come from a bush? Did you come mm-hmm. here with no clothes on? Did you come here naked? And he also had to educate. But he, when he met my mother was affiliated with the Panther Movement.
Okay.
In Chicago.
All right.
But when she moved to Buffalo, she started to get with some of the activist movements, such as the CAO, She worked with L. Nathan Hare for a long while. He was the CEO of CAO for a very long time. L. Nathan Hare, who also has the Alfonso Green Center as well. So she was affiliated with some black activists. So when my father and my mom got together, it was a cultural exchange.
Right.
It was the African-American experience in America and the African experience put together.
Right.
And me and my brothers and sisters, we are the result of that experience. So he got to understand what blacks in America were going through. Of course, you hear about the struggle, right? But it's another thing when you experience it. And I think as he came here, he started to realize being an African is no different than being black once you're in America. Mm. It's the exact same thing. So I think that's very, very important for any African immigrant to understand that once you're here in America, you're black.
Right.
So he fully ingratiated himself in the experience of being on both sides of the diaspora.
And not a small thing, but your dad came from Cameroon to play, as you've corrected me, football.
He played real football
in Cameroon. And he came to the University of Buffalo to play as well. It's always so wonderful to be able to hear backgrounds like that and how perspectives evolve. Is that something that you share with your when you have these students at the Buffalo Public Schools that, you know, this is who I was, you know, you know, this is how I didn't understand. Is that something you share?
Absolutely. You have to start with meet the kids where they are.
Okay.
Right? And if you show them you've done it, you've done the research and it's changed your life, of course they would want to do it. You know, I have a really good friend of mine who's really deep into black history, and he says black history saved my life. And I love that.
Sure.
I absolutely love that because it absolutely changed my life, too, once I came into the enlightenment of understanding the whole perspective. Right. You know, it's one thing to just see it as all black history. It's another thing when you start to see it as human history. That really changes your mind over.
We're with Emmanuel Kulu this morning on What's Next here on Buffalo Toronto Public Media NPR. Emmanuel will be at Buffalo History Museum on May 15th. He's part of a program called One Race, The Human Race. And we're going to learn on that particular night, HEAL, Human Equality and Access Leadership. HEAL. So what? Give us a little bit more about that.
Yeah, we see in this time that we're living in where the war has been on DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion. And we've also seen that movement kind of get usurped, so to speak. And some companies are kind of using it as a cover up, to cover their behinds. And why I say that is they were all for it when the presidency was all for it.
Mm-hmm.
And then when the presidency changed, they were no longer for
it.
So that's why I say a cover up, people who are dedicated.
It was almost a marketing element.
Mm-hmm. But when we came up with HEAL, HEAL is this nation does need to heal. This nation needs to accept what the past was. How this country even came to be was usurped from the Native Americans and the black indigenous people who were on this continent prior to Europeans coming here.
Right.
All of that history needs to be told. It's a true history. And Professor Kaba Kabane once told me, he said, every piece of the puzzle is important, right? You can't just tell history episodically. You have to tell it holistically, okay? You have to say, hey, the transatlantic slave trade happened, but that's not the beginning of black history. Africans were doing monumental things. The Wall of Benin, which we talked about.
Right.
The largest wall, four times the size of the Great Chinese Wall. And in fact, that wall was so large it can encircle the United States four times.
Mm.
See, this is history that people don't know. Just thinking about Africa and just saying jungle, bush, mud huts, disease, impoverished people. How did it get that way? We have to see the holistic perspective.
You've traveled frequently to the continent, mm-hmm. and at the same time, it sounds like your most, I guess, on the ground experiences in Cameroon with your father as well. Mm-hmm. At the same time, can you maybe take us through? I mean, obviously, there's so much here, and we could probably go on and on and on. But mm-hmm. I want maybe just I'm interested in kind of in your own personal development as you moved through Africa. How things started opening up for you? What caught your eye? What started changing? What types of history, parts of history, really were things that started moving you to, and obviously it's what's become your life's journey?
Yeah, you know, it was always so shocking because we're always told that the transatlantic slave trade was the beginning of Black history.
Right.
Again, my father never allowed us to accept that. So as I did start to move through and go to these places virtually and physically, I started to really connect with the people and see what is their perspective of Blacks in America, what is their perspective of America, period. Mm. And also, what was I seeing and how was I able to make a connection with the common people? So that was a really life-changing for me because there is a unification amongst Black people throughout the world, wherever you go. Even if you go to India, where the darkest people who are called the untouchables, so to speak, they call them the untouchables, they still identify themselves as being Black people. So just touching bases and seeing how culturally different they are, Africa is the most diverse place in the face of the planet.
Hmm.
So there's not one particular phenotype of Africans. There's so many. There's the narrow-nosed African. There's the long-haired African. There's the kiki-haired African. There's the red-skinned African. There's the Khoisan people who look very much like the Asians.
Hmm.
Nelson Mandela resembled them.
Okay.
Who are the oldest known DNA on the face of the earth is the Khoisan people. In derogatorily called the pygmies.
Hmm.
You have the tallest people in Africa, in Sudan. You have some of the shortest, which I just mentioned, people who they called the pygmies. The Bantu, the Swahili. I mean, you could just go on and on. All of these different garms, all of these different foods. What are the differences?
Right.
What are the similarities? Like what we have in Cameroon, we call fufu.
Fufu,
right?
Okay.
Fufu is like a mashed potato, right?
All right.
And but some people make it with coco yam. Some people make it with farina. Some people make it with powdered yam. And Ethiopians make it slightly just a little bit different. But it's still the same thing.
Did you make it in your house?
Yes. I still make it to this day.
Yeah?
Still
How do you
make it to this
it?
Day.
How do you make it?
I make it with farina.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Okay.
So just to see that beautiful cultural exchange. As a matter of fact, in ancient Egypt, you can find, I believe the original name for chess was called Sunet.
Okay.
Okay. And that was, you can see how that has translated thousands of years later. You can see the Eye of Horus on the back of the dollar bill. You can see the obelisk that you can see downtown anywhere in the United States,
right?
That's standing everywhere. That comes out of Africa. Also, ancient Egypt, when I wrote my book, I Black Pharaoh Rise to Power, was the focus. And it was the focus because ancient Egypt has always been separated from Black history. So that has been a very pivotal point of my studies, is ancient Egypt being a Black African civilization. Because every time you see a movie, Gods of Egypt, Ten Commandments, Cleopatra with Elizabeth Taylor. Love Elizabeth Taylor. But
she's about as white as it gets, right?
So just those things. So bringing that back into the scope of African history. If you go into the French and the British Museum, you'll see a section, Ancient Egypt. And then you'll see another section, Africa. Why isn't ancient Egypt in the same section? So it's stuff like that you notice. And then as I studied, I realized that ancient Egypt was not just pivotal for Eurocentric scholars to claim, but also it was pivotal for biblical studies to claim.
Okay.
Because ancient Egypt is, which was known as Kemet, which means land of the blacks. That was so important to biblical studies because the Israelite connection to Egypt with Moses and all of these things and Abraham. So they had to try to, Eurocentric scholars wanted to separate Egypt from Africa because if they didn't do that, they would have to say that these people that they are enslaving are the same exact people who built the pyramids. So I always say the same people who built the pyramids built the White House.
Well stated. Emmanuel Kula with us on What's Next. You mentioned also, and again, I don't want to make a monolith because, like you said, there's a lot of diversity mm-hmm. in Africa. So to say the opinions and views of one part of Africa are the same as others, but you mm-hmm. mentioned how you got to understand a little bit about Africans' view of Black Americans mm-hmm. and also of America as mm-hmm. well. I'm really interested to hear what you can share about that.
Well, the perspective is based off the media, right? The media promotes a very violent hip-hop, street, pimps, prostitution of Black America to the world. All right? That is mostly what we see in our media, period, when we see turn on the television. So a very narrow view. All right. And on the American side, we just mentioned.
Of course, yeah.
The jungles. Right. So you can see how both sides of the diaspora are a little bit divided.
Yeah.
And how this really puts me in a funny situation because I'm on both sides of the diaspora.
Right.
So, but yes, that is the image of African Americans abroad. Not just Africa, but that's what's being pushed to them. In fact, when many Africans come to America, they are told by their immigration officers, you're not like those other Black Americans.
Oh, jeez.
They're not like you. You're this, you're that, they're this, you're not the same. Don't get caught up in any type of movements or anything, or you could be deported back to your country. So this has also led to the diaspora divide. You know, not knowing those things. So again, this is why when we do Ancient African Antiquities Research Institute of America, we don't just want to pull Africans. We want to pull Europeans. We want to pull Asians, to all of them to understand that we all come out of Africa. And that is our common home place, the motherland for all of us. Once we realize those things, I think that'll change a lot. Well, from the racist perspective, I think once we see each other as a family, I think that really could change that perspective.
I'm interested about what you mentioned about hip-hop. Hip-hop, mm-hmm. a great art form.
Yeah.
It just continues to be creative and express all sorts of things. But it almost sounds like whatever's funneling through mm-hmm. has maybe almost having almost a reverse effect
yeah.
on impressions of Black Americans.
Oh yeah, well, hip hop started on the streets. It started as a form of expressing your situation.
Right.
And the same thing like the Yoruba people who express through story. And you can even see hip hop even now in the Afrobeat music. So hip hop has transcended itself, but it is a business.
Mm-hmm.
And the business is promoting more of a very negative view of African American lifestyle, all right? Which is more or less the minority, not the majority.
Right.
There's a whole different group of educated African American people who are doing wonderful things in the world. But again, this is not what's promoted, all right? So again, I believe hip hop has gotten far away from its true essence, which was graffiti, which was the DJs breaking, which was the message. You know, Bob Marley loved the message. Tupac Shakur, my favorite MC of all time.
Is that right? Okay.
It's all about the message,
yeah.
Right? These artists, they said something and they moved people and they also helped people get through the struggle. You know, African American people, as I mentioned to you before, the only people on the face of the planet that have been separated from their ancestral home. That's really, really tough. But we have still carried a lot of those things, sacred things from Africa. The storytelling, you know, this is how oral history was passed down to people. People who when the African drum, the djembe drum, was banned in slavery times because it was a form that they saw it as a form of rebellion or bringing people together for some sort of takeover, hostile takeover. Music is that for African-American people. I'm hearing all about this movie Sinners. And that's coming to my mind. I haven't seen it yet. But
our executive producer, Charles Gilbert, has seen it, by the way.
Yeah. But yeah. I'm hearing about it. And from what I'm hearing, this is what we're talking about with hip-hop. these vampires come into the, you know, into this music scene and the blues, and they're saying, they're attracted to the sound of it, and they say, hey, we want to control it. We have to control the masters of it. And they use that through money. They use that through media attention. They use that through many different ways. And eventually, those artists are sucked right in, so to speak, into the world of white supremacy and misleading the common people, and they don't even know it.
We've got quite a discussion going on this morning with Emmanuel Kulo here on What's Next. We're going to take a time out, come back with more. This is What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
The headlines don't stop. The world keeps moving, and through it all, you need news and information you can trust. That's where we come in. WBFO is now Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR. Same station, same trusted journalism, just with a new name. From Morning Edition to All Things Considered, from Group Chat to Friday Night Lights, from What's Next to the BBC, we bring you the stories and smart conversations that matter. No spin, no nonsense, just the perfect mix of news, information, and entertainment. Listen anytime on the BTPM Listen app or btpm.org.
This is Jack Cruiser with The Scoreboard on BTPM NPR. Listen during Morning Edition and All Things Considered each Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for the latest on pro matchups and college rivalries, as well as standout local athletes from Western New York and Southern Ontario. Want more? Listen to a longer version of The Scoreboard at btpm.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM Listen app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
And welcome back to What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR. I'm Jay Moran. My guest is Emmanuel Kulo, historian, author, and speaker. His company, Ancient African Antiquities Research Institute of America. And you can find that at aariaedu.com. And it's interesting, we kind of had this a bit of an exchange during our break here. And you're going to be speaking at the Buffalo History Museum. You're going to be part of this conversation, this program, One Race, the Human Race. Mm-hmm. And you said you wanted to make sure that this isn't a black versus white. This is welcome to everybody. I'm just curious, through your work, do you find that some people, because they are white, don't feel welcome or... Mm-hmm. Don't feel like it's for them. What do you say?
I've found that I've spoken at Harvard to an all white crowd, and they was well received.
Okay.
So I've heard those things. There's some people felt uncomfortable in coming. We do want to assure everybody that this is education. You are welcome. We are not race baiting. We are not throwing hate towards anyone, but we are going to express the historical facts.
They're hard realities.
I think that what some of those who identify as white have to understand is that white supremacy doesn't cover all white people. That's a very, very important thing.
Right.
In fact, when the foundation of America, it was about a group of 1% who were the elites, who were telling poor white immigrants at that time that their enemies were black and brown people. And this was the beginning of the slave catchers, which now we know is how the police department was eventually formed. But that's how it started, because these rich owners at the time who were white were telling themselves, well, if these poor white people gathered together with these black slaves and these indigenous and these Native American people, we're going to lose everything. Hmm. That's how this cycle has continued to go on. So it's very important, even for our white brothers and sisters, to understand the importance that they have also been miseducated. So to come and get re-educated on what the truth is and how we are all one big family. When we talk about things that happened in the South, we're talking about how African people are dehumanized. And that dehumanizing gave people a perspective that it's okay to oppress them. They're less than human.
Mm.
So that education, the Jim Crow, the Willie Lynch letters, and all of these things have really miseducated many people who identify as white.
White supremacy, again, it sounds like you've had some really in-depth conversations with a lot of people. Mm-hmm. I'll identify as white. What don't white people understand about white supremacy, the concept? Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, you hear the terms, it kind of gives you a vision of things. But what, again, education and understanding. What, is there something lacking in that?
White supremacy is, like I said, it doesn't cover all white people. It only covers the elites, the people who are controlling the world. I'm not going to mention them, but people can research that.
Sure.
The banks and all of these different things, people who own the banks. That thought process that they told the slave catchers in the ancient times that they would become like them if they oppressed these groups of people, that is not true. The American dream is not particularly true. Yes, we do have a measure of freedom to acquire wealth, but it will never equal out to what these people who were the founders of this civilization. They will never be like them.
Right.
So the thought process that you have to oppress someone to try to get to that status, it's impossible. It'll never happen. So just to understand that education and how that whole thing broke down, I think is very important to those who are blacks and non-blacks as well.
Might be especially important at a time like this where, you know, and we've also had programs here of talking about the hollowing of the middle, so to speak, in the United States, that, you know, as you called it, the American dream is becoming less and less achievable by a lot of people, and it doesn't matter whether black, white, or whatever the case may be.
So I like to call them people groups.
People groups.
Because that's just what it is. In the ancient times, as a historian, people divided by culture.
Right. Okay.
Not by skin color.
Sure.
Culture. You and I could be a part of the same culture. We both could serve Jehovah God, who is a God I believe in, and identify as brothers. People identified by their garment, by the foods they ate, by the foods they didn't eat. That's how people separated in the ancient days. It wasn't until the Spanish Inquisition in the 1600s where you started to see people identifying as colors. A man by Johann Blumenbach actually was an anthropologist who actually came up with these ideas to kind of divide people and create social constructs in a hierarchy, so to speak.
Emmanuel Kula with us here on What's Next this morning. You know, it's interesting. You started up your company right around the pandemic. Mm. So you did something that was pretty interesting. A lot of people didn't. The pandemic, of course, had a tremendous negative effect. Mm-hmm. But you were able to create virtual tours.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
How that evolved for you.
Well, you know, a lot of people on the continent, they started to connect with me due to my book, I, Black Pharaoh, Rise to Power. People were trying to make the connection between black history, African history, and that. So I started to get a lot of speaking engagements virtually.
Okay.
And I got invited to a few different virtual tours, one in Ethiopia, Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, and another one in Zimbabwe.
Okay.
And from then on, I started to connect with other people doing virtual tours. And then I started to bring some of my guests to these virtual tours themselves. So that's something I want to do further in the future. Ancient African Antiquities Research, we want to start bringing people to the motherland. We want to start bringing people to the hotels together. We're going to get on the bus and we're just going to go through these places, these archaeological sites, and see with your own eyes. That is our two-year plan. Within the next 2 years, we plan to start doing those group tours. But it really started back in COVID. Actually, started before COVID.
Okay.
It actually started in 2017, where I started to do some of those physical tours, and then the virtual tour started in COVID.
How about for you? Mm-hmm. What do you want to see in Africa? It sounds like you want to see everything.
Yeah.
But how about for you? What's next? I mean, what's on your horizon? What stands for you that are the achievements that mm-hmm. Tourism and achievement doesn't sound the right or seeing or exploring, mm-hmm. but the things you've seen, but now where you want to go? What do you think that'll be enriching?
I think what would be great to see is Africa reclaiming its own resources, Africa reclaiming its own history, Africa telling its own history. I think that's very, very important. I never thought it was good. I had a guy that I met in South Africa. His name was William Baer, and he introduced me to Joshua Sinclair, who was the original writer of Shaka Zulu TV series in 1986.
Okay. All right.
And me and him, we got together, and we was talking about making another Shaka Zulu, seeing that I'm a descendant of the Zulu tribe. And he was really interested in having me on board. And I told him, from my perspective, it's more important for Africans to tell African stories.
Right.
And we didn't agree on that, and eventually we parted ways, and that's when I went to write I, Black Pharaoh, and he tried to do whatever he was going to do in the future. But it's very important for African people to tell their own stories.
I like that, tell their own stories. And you mentioned that you're a descendant of the Zulu.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I think it's one of those things, and you struck on it when you mentioned the term pygmy also mm-hmm. earlier. You know, those names that have probably through media, for the most part, I would have to say, mm-hmm. you know, have developed their own images, right?
Mm-hmm.
But for you, I mean, have you been able to explore some of the other, you know, cultures inside mm-hmm. Africa? What can you tell us?
Yeah,
about
I have
them?
Been able to explore some of them, like the Xhosa people, the people of Ghana. They call themselves the Ga people. People in our country in Cameroon. This in Cameroon is divided between France and English. So I have had some really good experiences learning from these people.
Right.
But when I say I've been to these places, I want to be there and be taught by the common people.
Right.
That is something I have yet to do. But I have had some really good experiences in learning some of the cultural things.
Sure.
But based on time, based on work schedules, based on travel, I had the pleasure to do all of those things at once.
You also, just kind of inadvertently mentioning Cameroon, French, English, mm-hmm. you know, the imperialization. Imperialization, mm-hmm. is that a word? But the imperialism that took place mm-hmm. in Africa, and I guess in many ways it still exists. But what about the influence? What do you understand? Are more cultures breaking out of that mold? I guess mm-hmm. in some ways they'll always be influenced to a certain extent. But what do you understand? Again, you know,
some people
research.
Are trying to. The internet has become so prevalent, so now people are exposed to more stuff that was once hidden in the Vatican or hidden into certain libraries that people couldn't access, or museums are now, you can just search it now.
Yeah.
So that has really brought a new age of enlightenment to an extent. So people are definitely seeing things a lot different from a continent perspective. Some people may say, well, you say this world is black and white, but I see some of my enemies are the same complexion as me, you see? And that can be what they call tribalism, right? So the experience is different on the continent as to seeing the oppression that happens here in America. People can see and identify white supremacy in America where they might not be able to identify it in Africa, so to speak, because it's a little more hidden. It's more on a hierarchy level, right? So just seeing those differences also people are starting to get more educated on how imperialism works. What happened in the transatlantic slave trade and the Jim Crow South and all the stuff that happened in America, you have apartheid in Africa. Mm-hmm. You have colonialism in Africa. These are things that they're dealing with, but it's on a hierarchy level, not the in-person level.
I'm also got to be curious about growing up in the city of Buffalo, going to McKinley, mm-hmm. and people finding out, oh, your dad's from Cameroon. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, you've already talked about your own realization of Africa and your father making sure that you understood the point. Mm-hmm. But what about like maybe friends and classmates and stuff like that? Were they curious?
They were. Yeah. You know, I remember when I was in third grade, I did a project, and my dad and I, he was very intentional about showing ancient Egypt as a Black African civilization. So we got a sculpture. A mannequin head, and we took clay and put it around it. We painted them jet black, right? And we put the Egyptian beard on them, and we made a headdress out of cardboard, and we spray painted it gold and took it to school, and I got a B minus.
Whoa.
And I was so upset because no one went as hard as we went on that project. And it was explained to me, it was historically inaccurate by my teacher. Because King Tut wasn't a Black man, according to my teacher at the time. But again, that's miseducation as well. So throughout that process, people would always ask me, Manuel, what about this with Africa? What about that with Africa? And some would make fun too. You hear little monkey noises and things like that when they'll say my name, Kulu, and they'll try to identify it with Zulu and say, you know, make animal noises and things like that. So I went through that too. But that also really made me who I am today. And over time, people who were really interested, they would ask those questions. Hey, what is Africa really like? Is it like what they say? You know, and then over time, you started to see more things change. Black Panther came out, it really opened up a lot, right?
Sure.
When Black Panther came out, you started to see Afrocentrism on a whole nother level, you know? So that really started to change people's perspective, and it really shows you the power of the media, and the media controls the perspective.
We've got another time out, and then we're gonna come back with our final minutes with Emmanuel Kulu today on What's Next. Emmanuel, historian, author, and speaker. We'll come back with him and more on What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media right after this.
Corey here with the Compact Civics Expansion Pack.
America is such a big, wide, awesome place, and to be able to see things that are representative of so many different places, it can be so important when brought to your tiny town.
Everybody is so kind and loving. I'm here in Buffalo just because of State Buffalo.
From urban farms to rural fairs, we'll celebrate spaces that bring us together and create community.
Watch on the Buffalo Toronto Public Media YouTube channel.
Here, Here, live music in Buffalo, New York is your guide through the melodic pulse of the city. Get a VIP behind-the-scenes look at the broad collective of vibrant festivals, historic venues, and mind-blowing artists that take the main stage and make Buffalo, New York the music destination it is. Listen to Here, Here, hosted by Bentley on Thursdays at 11:30 a.m. and Saturdays at 6:30 p.m. on 88.7 BTPM NPR.
Facts, context, conversation. Your trusted local news source has a new name, but our mission remains the same. BTPM NPR. Explore more at btpm.org or download the BTPM Listen app.
You're listening to What's Next, our place to discuss the important issues of our communities of Western New York and Southern Ontario. We want to hear from you. Click on the Talk to Us option in the BTPM Listen app, and we will work to get your questions or comments on the air. Do you have a story or concern that we should be addressing? Email us using whatsnext@btpm.org. Together, we'll have the conversations that are needed. This is Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Yes, this is What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media NPR. I'm Jay Moran. We're winding down here with our conversation with Emmanuel Kulu. Emmanuel will be at the Buffalo History Museum for a program called One Race, the Human Race. It starts on May 15th at 5:30. Got a couple of things I want to get back to on that, but beforehand, you did intrigue me about your family. Mm-hmm. You said your mother is from Chicago.
Yeah.
And she was a Black Panther.
Well, she was affiliated.
Okay.
With the
well,
Panthers.
All right. Okay.
And she was affiliated with the Fred Hampton set. Fred Hampton's was murdered in Chicago, south side of Chicago, in his house while he was sleeping by the police department. And that's when she realized that perhaps that movement was getting a little bit too much for her.
Sure.
So because of the oppression that happened to it. So she decided
but
to
But she probably have taken a lot of influence
oh,
from that
absolutely,
movement.
Absolutely. She was one of those Afro-wearing women who really wanted to show her Black pride. So she decided that the best way to affect people was through education.
Okay.
So kind of the same perspective that I have on why education is so important.
The apple didn't fall far from the tree, huh? Yeah.
Exactly. Right, okay. Exactly. So she earned a double master's in education administration. She earned a master's in history. She also earned a master in English. So she went.
And she taught in the city district?
And she taught to the city district. In fact, May 17th. From the day she passed in 2017 has been considered by Mayor Brown at the time, Betty Kulu Day, because what she did in this city as an educator. She was assistant principal over at Stanley Mikowski for about 12 years over there. Before then, she was a teacher.
And since we're talking family, your stepmom, though.
Yes, yes.
A very different background.
Yes, my stepmother, similar. It's a little similar.
Okay.
She worked with children as well.
All right.
She started, she was the executive directing, founding director of the Child Care Coalition, which is now known as the Child Resource Network. Peg Agnello Kulu, she is an Italian woman. And what I remember so much about her is her taking in so many children to the small community center from diverse communities. Because daycare was such a need in the early 90s. And we didn't have a lot of facilities for those particular communities. And she began to open many of them through the Child Care Coalition. So my stepmother really was very, very passionate about, she thought at one point, and she told this to us, she says, my white privilege can't transfer to you guys, unfortunately, but I will use it to the best of my ability to protect you guys. And I will never forget that about her, because she's since passed on. But her path was also about the children, and the children were the future. She also taught us a great deal about hustling a little bit. Why I say that? Because at my dad's soccer game, she was the she was the person who would have the Huggies, the juices, the little beers for the guys afterwards, and we'd sell it. So, and the hot dogs and the hamburgers, the ribs, whatever it may be, we would have all of this stuff that we pack up in this van and sell it. So my stepmother really gave that to me. So I got all of these jewels from the Italian culture, from her, from the Black proud, from my mom, spirituality from my mom, and the cultural African history from my dad. So I just put all of those things together and just try to present them to the world as who I am today.
We both certainly appreciate you presenting them to us on this last hour here. And we are coming down to the few final minutes here. And, you know, as much as we've talked already, and we have, of course, mentioned the event at the Buffalo History Museum. Again, it's at 5:30, May 15th, One Race, the Human Race. Jillian Hainsworth will be there. But we haven't talked about the fact that the origin of this event is to honor the lives lost on May 14th, 2022.
Yeah.
We'll be up on the third anniversary of this. As best you can, you know, describe where, how you view, not just what happened 3 years ago, but what you've seen since then.
Yeah, you know, I saw a lot of DEI programs and I saw some come and go. But at that moment, it was very special. It was obviously the pain and the torment that we dealt with as a community. To be targeted that way, for people to target a community that was once a food desert. But what was beautiful that came out of that was to see people who are not from the east side of Buffalo come into the east side of Buffalo and walk Jefferson Avenue and show solidarity. These theories, white replacement theories, or things that ignited the Ku Klux Klan and all of these different things that happened, that have the destruction of Tulsa, Oklahoma, all of these different things that have happened historically to Black Americans. At that point, that time, I saw a lot of people who were outside the Black community come in and show solidarity. So that was a beautiful thing.
Sure.
We brought a lot of awareness. When we saw what happened with George Floyd on a global level, people were saying, well, maybe Black folks is not just saying this stuff is happening. Maybe it's actually happening, you know, because they've seen it in real time now.
Right.
So that was just another event that people are seeing in real time, white supremacy at its worst. So I think that was a great moment for it. Since, again, many companies said they were for diversity. They were at that point, and now we see where they are. So I'm also paying close attention to those companies who are doing that. And it also helps us to understand that the Montgomery boycott back in the 60s was very, very important. I think one of the strongest powers that African-American people have is their spending power. And when you notice these companies don't support you or don't support diversity, don't support inclusion, these are the people we need to start spending our money with.
What about in the city? I mean, you're mm-hmm. spending time in the classroom with through mm-hmm. your work as well. Mm-hmm. So you get to see, you know, some, unfortunately, here we don't get to see much of the youth. We get a few here mm-hmm. and there for different programs. But what do you see in the classroom? Do you sense any connection to 514 when you're in the classroom? Is that something that is discussed or just?
I think it should be more discussed.
Right.
Yes, it has been discussed. I've been a part of events where it has been discussed. Okay. Some kids don't understand the depths of it. And when we're seeing what's happening now, the wiping out, the whitewashing, and the removing of Black history from our schools, it's really not going to prevent future events like that from happening. It's just going to make the chances even worse because we're saying it's not needed history, but it is. It's very much. How do we, you know, a great person, a historian, some say a historian is a future teller, but they say that because history just repeats itself, especially if you don't learn from it. So it's very, very important that we learn this history and we teach it to these children, because these children are going to be the ones that are going to either push it forward or push it away.
We've got about a minute left here, Emmanuel, and I appreciate it everywhere you've gone with me on this conversation in this last hour here, but in terms of Black history and African history, as we want to talk about world history, everybody's history, mm-hmm. what you want our listeners to know, maybe even a call to action to them mm-hmm. right now.
What I want everyone to know is that we must tell the missing piece of the human story, Mama Africa. When I say Mama Africa,
I like the way you smile when you say that.
When I say Mama Africa, that's all of our mamas. You know, it's very important. Professor Ivan Van Sertma once said, "The only difference between human beings is heat and ice." Hmm. That's it. Some people have adapted to colder regions, and their hair got lighter, their skin got lighter. They ate certain foods, and they adapted to those foods in those regions. That's it. And you are what you eat, right? And some people who are closer to the equator, they're going to have more darker phenotypes. And that's it. That's the difference between human beings. If we understand these things biologically, scientifically, and biblically, and when I say biblically, in my TEDx talk, I mentioned how Jane Elliott said, we've been lied to about the number of races there are. When there's only one race, the human race, that sprouted out of Africa thousands of years ago. Biblically speaking, you're talking about ancient Egypt being the first mega civilization that the world was seeing, had ever seen. That was a Black African civilization. So if we're going to essentially say that Blacks have no history, then you have to completely erase Egyptian history, which is not just by Egyptologists. It's also in biblical studies as well.
Hopefully you're as curious as I am about a lot of the things that Emmanuel has shared with us this hour. He is his venture is Ancient African Antiquities Research Institute of America. The website, aaariaedu.com. Emmanuel Kulu, thanks very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
It has been an absolute pleasure. And of course, we mentioned it, but we'll repeat it. May 15th, Buffalo History Museum. Emmanuel, one of the speakers at One Race, the Human Race. This has been What's Next on Buffalo Toronto Public Media, NPR.
Support for WBFO and What's Next comes from our members and from Health Foundation for Western and Central New York, where racial and socioeconomic health equity are prioritized. Learn more about building healthier neighborhoods at hfwcny.org.